Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fortress Comic News, episode 333. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
333. Not a whole lot. Bought some physical comics, got those in the mail, so that's always exciting. These, these Godzilla Rivals books I was talking about. I was a fan of this cover of Mothra versus Titanosaurus. That's pretty sick.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's always fun getting this week too.
What'd you get?
So there was a sale on the Umbrella Academy library editions.
Oh, hardcovers?
All three for $55.
That's crazy.
Two of them showed up.
Oh my god. Those are so beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't even taken out of the plastic, but like, so this is the size of them, like this is a normal comic.
Yeah, that's awesome. Those are like the image hardcover collector's editions.
Yeah, so I'm really happy.
Where'd you find those? Who had a sale?
Amazon.
Really?
Yes. Amazon had all of them for under $60.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
One of these library editions. I've never bought it. This is my first time I bought a library edition.
Uh-huh.
One of these is $40.
Yeah, that's like a crazy retail. Good deal.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
I'll have to check it out. See if they're still really up there.
Cool. Last one comes tomorrow, I think. So
I was going through my comics collectors app because I think once like the winter time hits, because I got the drawers and stuff, I'm gonna organize some stuff. I'll probably purge some comics because I have the stuff that I like want, you know, in my collection, some stuff I don't really want anymore. But I'm finally like catching. I'm like completing my stuff I'm missing. Like I was missing some Earth 2 Society issues, not Earth 2 World's End or the original New 52 Earth 2, but the somewhere in the middle there. I was missing some issues, so I've been like catching up on those, trying to fill that out because those, you know, nobody's buying those issues, so,
which sucks because that was such a good book.
I know. So it that's why it's fun to like round out the collection because you're like nobody cares about these books, but I do. Like, and I'm looking through the covers, you know, with like Val Zod on it and shit like that. Those stories were so good.
But. Yeah, to anyone out there, that New 52 Earth 2 book. Like, I know people, and we still say like people want Just Society, and we still do.
Yeah,
but and that was why that book got so much like heat was because it wasn't the Just Society.
Yeah.
But that book was so good. All the Earth 2 stuff during, I mean, Future's End was kind of hit or miss near the end there, but
yeah,
a lot of the Earth 2 stuff during New 52 was great. I love that book.
Yep. Yeah, it's, I have the original, and then the Society one was the one I was missing, because I was like, yeah, I forgot it. Switched over, you know, so. But, yeah, then I'm going to have, like, all my Batman stuff easily accessible, you know, in the drawers, and we'll see. We'll see what else I want to keep and what I want to get rid of. But we do have an interview today, folks. Barney Smith will be on the podcast. We're going to talk about his interesting book he has on Kickstarter. It's a little change of pace for the show. So,
yeah.
Stick around.
Tell some jokes.
Stick around for that. We're going to tell some jokes. Yeah.
And stick around for the rest of the week because lots of interviews coming out this week.
Yeah,
lots of interviews. So
lots of them. So there you go.
Lots of good content for the Labor Day weekend for all you, USA listeners.
Yeah, the if you have Monday off, good for you.
If you had Monday off.
Sorry, it's not Wednesday. I forget that we fuck around with the timeline in the show. Dang. All right. Well, maybe we'll just jump right into it. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Disney has been fairly quiet about the X-Men 97 since the announcing it in 2021. Outside of rumors and some voice casting announcements, we learned this week through a report from Hollywood Reporter that there is some news about the animated series. First, they say that the release time frame has shifted from fall of this year to early 2024. Also, they claim that the second season is already in early development, showing that Disney has faith in the series to be a hit. Yeah, I mean, everything's being delayed because of the writer's strike, right? So,
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, I'm sure when they announced it, there was the ripples through all social media. People are probably like, oh, my God. because that's how we were. But I mean, it's pretty promising. We're already getting a second season.
Yeah, I'm sure they're in like really early development of what the storyline is going to be and everything. So there's plenty of chance to cancel that second season. But I'm not going to be the downer because I want this to be good because I love that X-Men cartoon when I was a kid. Yeah, I'm sure this is done and like voice casted and animated and everything. It feels to me like it's a, we don't know how long the strike's going to go on for, and we need to like put some time in between our content to drag it out a little bit kind of thing.
Yeah. I can't just announce it all or release it all at once.
Yeah. It's a bummer, but as a fan, it's a bummer. But you know, that's kind of the time we're living in right now. I'm betting you it's going to be kind of like we're now living in a video game world where things were pushed because of COVID. And now like this year, everything came out.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's going to be a year from now with like TV and movies where like everything's getting pushed and then like a bunch of shit's going to come out all at the same time.
Come out, yeah. Right.
Because of the strike.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that all falls out. But as far as this, I'm really stoked for X-Men the Animated Series come back, and I guess we'll just wait a little bit longer.
Yeah, you're right about that video game stuff. So many games came out this month, and it's like, man, I want to play them all.
Yeah, go back to the last year. It's been insane, dude.
It's been a crazy year of video games for sure. Yeah. I completely forgot about Armored Core. I have like 30 games on my wish list still, and I don't know. I was trying to like trim them down. Like maybe I don't have to play some of these games, and I was like, shit. There's like some games that came out months ago that I still want to get and play. But
I had two I wanted to get through before next weekend because Starfield comes out.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to finish one. Not because it's super long, but just because I don't have time that much.
Yeah.
And I don't know because I want to finish Final Fantasy 16, which keeps telling me I'm like at a percentage. And then when I really looked it up, I'm like, I'm not as far as this game's telling me that I am.
Like 90 hours to go.
Well, I was looking up like, okay, where am I in the game? And looked at the chapter list. I'm like, okay, I'm like 2/3 of the way through.
Oh, okay.
Where like, I don't know, not that long ago, I was telling me I was halfway. And I've put in a bunch of time since then. So I definitely was not halfway. But, and I really wanted to play Sea of Stars, but I'm probably going to have to skip that because
Starfield's coming. And I've heard some good things. I was talking to somebody yesterday who was playing Starfield and they were enjoying it and they were happy that Bethesda's back to like develop, you know, having a developed game on the market. So
yeah, the fans, the people I trust, they're fans of it, are really loving it. The people I see saying like negative things are the people that are just fanboying. But yeah, I took a week off of work just to play this fucking game. So
yeah, I mean, there's always gonna the loudest people. I mean, the loud, annoying people are always gonna be there. But if you're enjoying a video game, enjoy it. Yeah, like whatever. I won't shit on people for playing. I mean, I play a degenerate game of Dota 2, so.
Yeah, Mike hates having fun.
Yeah, who am I to judge anybody?
And I really want to play Baldur's Gate, dude.
I do, too.
I really want to play it.
But there's no tie.
No, there's no.
There's no tie.
I have to quit my job to play that fucking game.
Yeah.
And probably this podcast as well.
Even like to watch people stream it, I'm just like, man, I don't have time to sit and watch this. Like, you know, you get to see him loot one room and you're like, it's been an hour. What happened?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so much good stuff coming out. Yeah. And I'm playing a game called Returnal right now, which is just really good. That came out for PC, but there's Armored Core. Like, when the hell am I going to get to that soon? Yeah. Hopefully. But,
yeah, the X-Men cartoon looks good.
Yeah. Back to the X-Men. Thanks for bringing us back. X-Men cartoon looks good. Not on here. I know you're going to talk about Ahsoka episode 3, but I did hear good things about. I'm not like the biggest One Piece fan, but the show came out this week on Netflix, the live action show.
Is this a show? I thought it was a movie.
Oh, maybe it's a movie.
Something, I could be wrong. I'm not
something live action. I think it was. All I've heard though is like it's really like they went Netflix went like campy style with it, and it's actually like enjoyable. And I was like, okay, I'll probably check that out.
Oh, it is a show.
It is a show. Okay. Yeah, so I've heard it's really campy, so that sounds like my style. and I'll probably end up checking it out. I completely forgot it was even coming out. So I'll have to,
watch it. I make fun of my nephew constantly because he watched all of One Piece. So
like the 2,000 episodes. I mean, the characters are great. When I was younger, I watched like the first couple seasons and then I just couldn't keep up. But I think the characters are really cool.
To everyone out there, like, I don't know, when you're in my family or you're a friend, like if I'm making fun of you, it's out of love. So
no,
like,
it's a good thing. Yeah.
Cause like, trust me, every time I would like be like, oh, you're watching One Piece, or, you know, whatever I'd say about One Piece. And I'd just be like, be a man and like play Pokemon instead. So obviously I'm just shitting on myself too.
And obviously something with 1200 episodes or whatever the hell, they've got a pretty solid foundation to stand on, that it's they have a pretty big fan base.
Yeah.
But I want to watch it and like it, but on the same side of that, I really loved Cowboy Bebop when they released the live action and it got canceled after one season. So it was like, I don't trust Netflix anymore.
You shouldn't.
Yeah. The Cowboy Bebop, I really loved it. And even the actors were like really invested, but not anymore, I guess. All right, Star Wars Ahsoka episode 3. I'm actually watching Rebels. I'm probably almost done with the first season. It's really good. I mean, you told me it was really good. There's a lot of cool moments, a lot of lightsaber battles, a lot of cool characters. So I'm getting through that before I start Ahsoka.
I'm glad you're liking it because I think the first season's the weakest season too.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Episode 3 was basically Ahsoka training her new and old Padawan, and kind of going through that whole thing. It's really funny because it was pointed out online that in Ahsoka, a Mandalorian is training to be a Jedi. And then in Mandalorian, a Jedi is training to be a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a funny back and forth. But we discover this like hyperspace ring that the bad guys are making. That's supposed to be able to help them jump galaxies, which is something that is seen in Old Republic lore. So that's kind of cool to see some Old Republic stuff coming to light. Probably the first time that I can think of that Disney Star Wars has acknowledged the Old Republic in any way.
That's cool.
And then cool fight scene in space. Ahsoka gets in a flight suit that looks like Vegeta's suit and fights some starships in space with lightsabers. That was pretty neat.
What the hell?
Yeah. And then they go on the planet and land and kind of try to figure this stuff out. So it was kind of a decent episode, but it was kind of a, you know, let's get some details in, stretch things out. It was weaker than the first two episodes, but it was still fun. I'm at the point where like, let's just get to that fucking galaxy so I can see some Thrawn, everybody. Like, do not do this shit where Thrawn shows up in like episode 7.
Last episode, he turns around. And you're like,
yeah,
roll credits.
So we'll see. I still enjoyed it. Just not quite as much as the first two. The first two were just straight porn for me because it was just straight. Like, here's some Rebels shit that you've been loving for years.
Yeah, here they are. Here are the characters. Yeah. That's awesome. Movie news. Ron Perlman said on Geek House Show podcast this week that he would still want to do a third Hellboy movie if given the chance. He went on to say that the series was originally supposed to be a trilogy. He's getting pretty old, Chris.
Yeah.
But they do have CGI now. So, I mean, he's getting old, but he's not as old as Harrison Ford, who's still doing movies. So I really don't know what to say about that anymore. I love those Hellboy movies. I do. So,
those first two Hellboy movies are great.
If you bring Guillermo back, yeah, okay. Then
if you get if you get him back and they want to do it together, fine. But this isn't going to happen, everybody. Like,
no, it's not. It's definitely not.
Because if you remember, prior to the strike, like earlier this year, they had casting for a new Hellboy. They had a new movie in pre-development. Like,
yep.
Maybe that gets canceled because of all this going on. I don't know, but I would doubt it. It's an IP that's shown strength in the past, and that's kind of how Hollywood works now. So I don't see it happening. Would I like it? Yeah, like you said, if everybody came back, right, I'd give it a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have high hopes for it, but
no.
It's cool that he still has like some sort of love for that character and that he remembers fondly doing that character. I think as soon as he puts all the makeup on and everything, though, he'll be like, why the fuck did I agree to this?
Yeah. Like hours and hours in the makeup suit. Like, why am I doing this?
But it would be cool to see all that come back.
Yeah. Now I haven't watched those movies in so long. Now I want to watch them.
Yeah. I almost think at this point, if you really want to do it and finish your story, either Gilmore coming back as doing a comic or probably a better fit would be doing an animated thing and saying, you know, this is what we wanted for the third movie.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Game news. We don't always have game news on the podcast, folks. Marvel announced they partner with Six to start to make a new fitness app called Marvel Move. This app is a story-driven running app that encourages users to get out and run alongside some of Marvel's biggest heroes. Six to Start is best known for its story-driven fitness app, Zombie Run. So here we go. We got this video that Chris is playing.
It's a cool idea.
Right.
I hear people talk about Zombie Run, really enjoy it.
Okay.
And basically anything that kind of brings fitness to the forefront in any way or gets people running or something, I'm all for.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might check it out just because one of my like goals for next year is to do a 5K.
Uh-huh.
And like we'll get down into it, but one of the training programs is to train for a 5K.
Yeah.
So it's neat that they're doing something like this. And I like it. I like the initiative. I like it's kind of a kooky, fun way to get people active. And if it works, then good on them.
Is it like a audio book that goes along as you're running? Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah. So here, I'll turn on the audio for this.
Yeah. Let's
turn
on some audio.
Collected a bottle of water and 2 adamantium shards.
Just 1 kilometer to go. You can do it, recruit. We leave no mutant behind.
Huh. Interesting. That's kind of like, it's like trying to motivate you.
Yeah, here.
All right,
2 miles in 13 minutes, 45 seconds.
Runner, I'm with you.
What the?
Keep going.
Is that supposed to be Hulk?
Impressive, yeah. Mortal. You're keeping pace even with Mjolnir.
They got us surrounded, bub. Looks
like. Yeah, so I mean, I guess an idea.
Well, those voices are pretty bad.
They're pretty cheesy.
Oh man, that was awesome. Yeah.
Well, it's funny here. Cool, so like the 5K training is Thor and Loki.
Asgardian
5K.
Okay.
I don't know who, and it tells you who they're written by. So written by Alex.
Oh, Teeny Howard. Teeny Howard wrote one of these. That's funny.
It's a Teeny Howard writes the X-Men one.
Oh my god.
Yeah, there's a Hulkville one.
Wow.
I wonder what the Daredevil training is. Do I have to close my eyes for it? And then
you just sit still.
Yeah, and then Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch. So there's some cool things.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I kind of wish they got, I mean, Teeny Howard's cool. Yeah. I like Teeny Howard, and that's a name. Everybody else kind of like, I don't know who Matt Witeska is or
no.
Bilal
Dardai.
Yeah. And Kim Richards. I'm not sure who these
people
are.
Yeah, I'm sure they just grabbed some people to do these.
Yeah, they just found some people on the street.
Yeah.
I'm sure they work for whatever the, what was the company? Six to start.
Six to start.
They probably work for that company.
It's still interesting, though, to have a different medium, you know?
Yeah. So I like this. I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah. All right, everybody. We're going to jump to this interview with Barney Smith, talk about some dad jokes, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we got another very special guest for you all this week. I want everyone to welcome to the show, Barney Smith. Welcome, Barney.
Hey, how's it going? How am I sounding? Do I sound okay? Am I coming into the mic?
Oh, yeah, you sound right? Fantastic, right. Barney. Fantastic.
You know, what's one of the, sometimes depending on it, that sometimes there's nothing worse because as we mentioned before we went live is that before we start recording that I do a podcast myself. And there's been a couple times where I ended up recording off of my mic off of my webcam.
Yeah.
And then, so the guest sounded completely fine, but then I was like, "Well, so welcome to the social," and man, that is just, you know, what can you do when that happens?
That happens to us too. So it's not just you. I mean, Chris and I all the time will be like, "Dude, you sound like you're in a tin can. I think you're using the wrong mic." Yeah, because it always picks it up. So we still have technical difficulties too. So it's all good. No, but you sound great. You sound great.
Perfect. Well, thank you. Yeah, you look great. I put in my dad, my dad-ish shirt that I could find for the podcast. Yeah. Be on here. So yeah.
Because we are talking
dad jokes. Entertained with some dad jokes.
Yeah. So we're talking dadder jokes today, everybody. It's a Kickstarter that's out right now. We're gonna get to that in a second because we need to hear some of these jokes. I hope are you wearing the white New Balances too? We probably can't see.
Oh, even better. I'm wearing white socks with Crocs. See,
that's
that's
too
much.
You got in character for this book then.
See, I did. I remember it was Father's Day, and I remember going when I was at Father's Day. The thing I love about Father's Day is just going to the hardware store and just like being by myself and just buying, you know, like things that I think I can fix.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember somebody said, "Oh, by the way, happy Father's Day." I'm like, "How did you know I was a dad?" And she said, "You got white socks with Crocs on." I'm like, "Okay, fair play."
you're wearing the uniform.
I was wearing the dad uniform.
That's all. Yeah, they can spot you down the street, dude. Come on.
Exactly.
It's built for comfort, right?
I know. It's like, you know what? There's a lot to be said based off of the footwear you wear, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like when you put on Crocs on, you're basically saying to the world, "Hope I don't get chased today." Like, I mean, it's just like.
Yeah, you're too comfortable with your surroundings that you don't think anybody, you're going to have to run for any reason.
Yeah, you don't have to run at someone or with someone at that point when you're wearing Crocs. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It makes me wonder what I'm telling the world as a guy in his mid-30s who still wears skate shoes every day.
One day you'll get back. It's like the hopeful, I'll get back to it one day.
Yeah,
you know, my knees don't hurt too bad yet. Well, Barney, man, thanks for being here. And I'm sorry we got to put you through this because it is your first time on the show. You know, where did it all start for you as far as like the origin story, for writing, making projects, things like that?
Right.
Because where did that all start for you?
So I'll give you the abbreviated version that kind of sums up my last 25 years. So
okay.
if you're ever doing this, if you do this in editing, you know, like if you just like add like a timer or something on the bottom.
Yeah. So that'd be great. Yeah.
Just stop in the middle and I'll put the SpongeBob meme in.
Yeah.
3 hours later.
Several hours later. Yes. Fantastic.
So I graduated from art school in 1998, and I did what anybody, you know, smart enough to do when you graduate art school unless you wanted to be a millionaire, because 1998 everybody became a millionaire if they just made a website.
Right.
That was the famed internet bubble where you had pets.com. Everybody just made a .com thing and thinking this is it. We're good.
Yep.
And so what I did is I did what what any art student who graduated with an art degree did in 1998, you know, obviously, you know, join the Peace Corps. So that's what I did. So I joined the Peace Corps and then I ended up, I ended up going to Niger, West Africa. It's a French speaking country. And it was, and they, you know, the bar was so low because they couldn't find anyone to join the Peace Corps. They basically said, "So do you speak French?" I'm like, "I took 2 years in high school." They didn't test me or anything. They said, "Okay."
So no, good. You don't speak
French. Yeah, I don't speak French at all. And then they said, "Do you have any medical background?" I'm like, Yeah, my aunt is a nurse." I'm like, "Okay, that's good." So they literally, it was like the bar was so low. Like it was amazing.
I used peroxide on a cut once.
My best friend's sister once put a bandage on me. Does that count? Yeah, you're good.
Come on,
your uncle cousin's brother's roommate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I ended up, so I wasn't up in the Peace Corps, and I was there for 2 years. And usually the run is about 2 years. Mm-hmm. But by 2 years, I ended up speaking the local language at that point. I understand the culture. And like, I was like, why would I want to leave at this point? I mean, it's basically, I'm sitting here. This is a good time. I'm living in a mud hut in the middle of the African bush. I'm pulling water out of a well. I'm living like nowadays, this is considered like luxury, like YouTube video stuff of like, wow, you know, living off the grid.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have 100,000 YouTube subscribers if I actually recorded my adventures there.
Yeah.
You know, a pit latrine, all that kind of stuff. And so I was there for about 4 years, and then I still really liked the work that I was doing, doing that. So I came back home and got a master's degree in international education, and still had the bug of going overseas. So then I did an emergency relief work. So I worked for Doctors Without Borders and other international relief organizations like that. So chronologically speaking, I was in Pakistan after the earthquake. I was for a year. Then I was in the Philippines for about a year doing typhoon relief work. Then I was in South Sudan working during their independence push to become their be an independent country from Sudan. And then I was in Zimbabwe during the cholera outbreak. I was there for about a year. And then I was in Uganda working at an HIV clinic in rural Uganda. And then after that, I was in Libya during the revolution, repairing ambulances and getting shot at. And then after that, I went to Nigeria and I was in Lagos at an urban maternity healthcare clinic. And so that was there for about a year. So that's where I met my wife. And
what
so
I just learned is I'm a piece of shit.
Barty, man, this is awesome.
I once drove down the street and helped the guy with his mail. I don't know.
This is, I mean, I'm just so captivated right now. I forgot we were even interviewing you. I'm just like, it's like I'm watching, I think I'm like watching a documentary about Barty. This is amazing. So I'm sorry, keep going. You met your wife.
So I ended up, so I met my wife, and then I met my future wife there. And so we always laugh at this whole idea of like, you know, like the 90 Day Fiance show. People like 90 Day Fiance, and people like, that's so fake. That's bull. That's no way. Here's the thing. I met my wife. We dated for a month before we got married. So it's the same generic story 100 people have heard before. It's that the slightly overweight Vermont cartoonist marries Nigerian runway model. I mean, everybody's heard the story a million times. And so that's the thing. Like, I can only pretend to be cool for like a month and then it blows. Like, I married up. Yeah. Like, I made sure that she thought, you know, like I was it. And then fast forward, we've been married now for 11 years. We have three kids.
Congrats.
And we are literally living the 90s, the 90s sitcom where it was like the weird, goofy husband marries a beautiful woman. And be like, yeah, that's all Hollywood. Like, we're the living embodiment. My mother-in-law lives with us. I literally live in a sitcom. It's amazing. Like, I get, it's like, yeah, so
the Goldbergs, I have the something. It's like, yes, the Goldbergs.
I know. I got the Nigerian mother-in-law living with us. I got the three kids.
See, this is the difference between Mike and me. Is I was gonna go with Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, true. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yep. Wow.
Well, yeah, but the piece. I kind of have a like sidebar. I really believe I have a working theory that if it's the opposite gendered in-law, there's no competition. So say, for instance, if it's like my mother moved in, there'll probably be issues with my wife my mother.
Oh, yeah.
If my father-in-law moved in and he died a long time ago, which is – no, I'm kidding. I never met the guy. No one's watching this. It's gonna know who he is.
Nobody watches the YouTube version. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Nobody watches.
Nobody from Lagos is going to be watching the show. I hope not.
I'm promoting this in that place.
Yeah.
No,
we're good.
So I think that would be an issue if my father-in-law moved in, but because it's, say, for instance, if it was my father moved in, there'd be no issues because it's not like there's opposing issues with between my wife and my father.
Right.
Same
right.
thing. It's like it's my mother-in-law moving in. There's no clash of cultures happening between like saying, you know, like, well, this is what we did. Like, so that's
right.
So it's super easy because basically it just feels like we just have like a third parent here. And multi-generational homes by far are some of the best things you can ever do in human mm-hmm. society as well. Mm-hmm. Side note on that is that it really isn't since like the past 80 years. If you think about it, for the last 20,000 years, we've always had multi-generational homes. Your grandparents, my grandparents, when they were kids, had their grandparents living in their home with them. So only something that's recent that it actually popped up with like the post-World War II generation, where they decided to live on their own and mm-hmm. say, we're not going to live with our, whether it be like a lot of people give it the, to the credit of like the advent of Social Security, for instance, it's like mm-hmm. allowing the oldest generation to live more independently longer is good. But to the detriment of that, what we've seen pop up because of that is the advent of nursing homes, the advent mm-hmm. of childcare facilities, right. all these things that actually popped up because of the fact that homes aren't multi-generational anymore. Mm. So that's a piece of it. So basically we got our three kids and that's kind of popped up with the idea of actually doing the dad joke book that I did. So
yeah,
as I mentioned, I'm a cartoonist by trade, not a cartoonist by career.
Right.
Because I have three kids I have to feed, so I'm not a career cartoonist. It was the year, take a journey with me for a second to the year 2020. Yeah. So okay. 2020 was a pretty raw time here in the United States.
Yeah.
Worldwide, but here in the United States, we were dealing with COVID-19.
Yep.
We had an election season.
Yep.
And we also had the George Floyd murder, and we had the Asian hate that was happening as well. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that was happening in the United States during 2020. And yep. we always mention the fact that even in 2023, we talk about how social media, man, what a cesspool, man, everybody, there's all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But at least in 2023, if you see somebody, you can curate your social media feed way easier than you could 3 years ago.
Right.
In the year 2023, if somebody says something that is divisive or something that is like you completely oppose, or like, I'm blocking that person. Boom, one button, boom. Never have to see him again. It's fine.
Yep.
In the year 2020, more feeds were defaulted to public feeds. Mm-hmm. There was more things where you ended up having to like try to block somebody, had a right click on their name and window pop was like, have you talked to them first? I'm like, what do you know? Right. I don't even know who this person is. The only button was to report, like regular, like I don't want to report this person. I just don't want to see.
Right. I just don't want to see it social anymore. Media
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah. So what I did is I wanted to make sure that at least my neck of the woods was just kind of like safe and accommodating. So what I did is that, and accessible to everyone. So what I did is that before that, every few weeks I'd post a dad joke or two, but I said, you know what? I'm just posting a dad joke every single day. I'm doing one. And of course the low hanging fruit, I was able to really grab a hold of, like the low hanging fruit, like, you should always knock on the fridge before opening it just in case there's a salad dressing. Like those are just easy to find. I just watched a program about beavers. It was the best dam program I've ever seen. Dam, D-A-M.
Yeah.
Salad
dressing one is so smart.
It's awesome. 10 times out of 9, you'll find me exaggerating about something. I ordered a chicken and an egg from Amazon. I'll let you know. These are the ones that are like, these are the easy. You can pull these up. These are the ones you can just find on the internet. You just put them.
Yeah.
Yesterday, a clown held the door open for me. It was such a nice gesture. Wow. It was. Yeah. Wow. See.
Wow. I love it.
I love it. If somebody's hotter than you, that just means you're cooler than them. See, that one's just a good play on words.
I like that one.
Yeah. So these are the ones that are easy just to pick right there. But I noticed now I've been doing it for almost 4 years that every single day I've searched, curated, and invented jokes that I posted every day online on my feed. And what's really fun about this is that it's So a couple of things about this book, that my first book, Dad Jokes. And then, of course, as you can see, I have a green screen because my book is see-through here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
No, you know my secrets. No, this is real.
It's a real bookshelf, people. Just believe it.
I'm so prepared. So good. The first thing is, like, the book itself is full color. I've yet to find a joke book that actually is not just black and white. Like, there's a full color joke. Because I'm a cartoonist by trade, I've also been able to color. So because, as I mentioned before, that I have my 9 and 6 year old are girls. So I have two daughters. Mm-hmm. We firmly believe there's no such thing as gender specific chores in the house.
Yeah.
So I, for instance, have, and every page actually has some kind of illustration mm-hmm. on it, like a lawnmower. And then I do the laundry, so I have a washing machine on here.
Yep. Yep.
Everything that you'd see somebody's dad doing, you know, mm-hmm. baseball, basketball hoop.
Yep.
Everything here is modeled around the concept of a potential place that you would find a dad doing something, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like a chainsaw and a rake, you know.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And the washing dishes, and then there's a farmer, like corn.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
So that's the first thing about this book that's different. It's full color. The second thing about this book, as I mentioned, is that there is, invariably speaking, you're gonna buy a joke book, and it's gonna have something maybe misogynistic in there, something racist, mm-hmm. something that is detrimental or derogatory towards somebody's mental, intellectual, or physical capacities, or just and just insult an entire culture of people altogether. Mm-hmm. For me, I firmly believe that jokes should be inclusive, not exclusive. Jokes should not be a form of bullying. Jokes should be a form of bringing people together, not creating a culture of other. Mm-hmm. It should always be a unifying factor, because there's nothing better than actually like laughing with people mm-hmm. and not laughing at people. Laughing at people is not nice. Yeah. And so that's the one thing I'm really proud of about this book, that it's 100% safe for anyone to read. And here's the thing. What I love about joke books, jokes are the best gifts to give people. And when you buy a joke book, unless you've read every one of those jokes in there, chances are there's going to be something in there that's going to be either offensive or mildly offensive, or just not funny because it's kind of mean. Mm-hmm. And when you buy it, so there's two type of gifts that you give. You either give a gift to somebody that you either give a gift to somebody that you think they're going to like, or you're giving a gift to someone that actually like reflects your own values. Mm. So for instance, a grandparent might give a savings bond to a 10-year-old.
Right.
If you're a 10-year-old, you're like, thanks. Like,
what is, well, okay.
Whatever. Okay. Kind of wanted a transformer, but
yeah. Right, right.
But that, so that's the those are the two types of gifts. What I love about this book, and then the dadder joke book that we're going to be talking about, is that it is, invariably speaking, if you buy a joke book that actually has something that's offensive in there, you're either saying, you're inadvertently saying two things. You find derogatory humor funny, mm-hmm. or I find derogatory humor funny. So that's what you want to make sure is that when you're doing this, but when you give this book, it's completely safe, and there's mm-hmm. nothing in there that is offensive. My brother works at a stone quarry. He hangs out with a lot of men's, like he has a metal metal lunchbox with a thermos, yep. and he sits down on the side of the wall, and his buddy's like, bring that, bust out that book your brother made. That's some funny stuff. And then so he'll read a few passages. I got a 6-year-old that goes to the first grade. She has the book in her backpack for reading time.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
The teacher said, "What is this?" And she took it away for her, and she read it, and she started laughing in the middle of reading time. And then she goes, "This is fine. You just give it back to him. It's fine." My mother is a minister at church, and she keeps the book at church. So that's what I'm saying is, like, the book itself is, I mean, granted, some of these jokes my mother's not going to get, like the cast of Friends got stuck in sea in a boat, but thankfully nothing happened because Lisa Kudrow. So wow. see, like she doesn't, she's not gonna get that one. But you know, the reopening of Lego World was a big deal. People were lined up for blocks. Like none of that is some of those jokes my mother's not gonna get, but it's some of those jokes are just but it's, they're safe jokes, you right, know, they're safe right. jokes. They're not, they're
it's almost, I mean, it's like an all ages, like we have all ages comics, right? It's like an all right. ages joke book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's yeah. it, like to bring it back to like something that I would know of, but like that's, and the jokes that you're, I mean, some of those you've come up with yourself. Are there any that you're very proud of? You're like, wow, this was like,
yeah,
this is the one. Yeah.
Yeah. What's really funny is like I mentioned before, about 5% of the jokes I actually invented myself. Okay. It doesn't mean I'm like, I'm not smart or anything. It's just when right. let's play on puns.
Yeah.
Puns and wordplay is not rocket science.
Right. It's just right.
like,
it's just
fun. I just rhymed, you know, I just said a typo walks into a bat. Like, yeah, I mean, that's yeah, not, right, I right. mean, it's like, it's, you know, something along those lines is like, see, that's a thinker. See, Chris, you got that. A typo walks into a bat. See,
it's, yeah, he's thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't get it.
Walks into a bar. It's a typo.
Oh. Walks into a bat.
I actually saw that one on the Kickstarter page, and I thought about it for 10 minutes today. So that's why I knew it ahead of time. Okay. I would have been lost too, Chris. Don't worry.
That's one of those ones, if you didn't say anything, we would have finished this interview. I would have been driving, because I have my fantasy football draft later. I've been driving to that later, and I'd be like, oh, that's really funny.
I get it.
There's this one, and it's so funny because this one joke I invented, I've actually seen it out in the wild a couple times since then. It was back in 2019. It was one of the first jokes I was just posting every couple of weeks. And I was driving my kid out to school, and I live in Vermont here, and which is right next door to you all. We share a lake. So yeah, it's a Lake Champlain. See, yep, on the, yep. You got it right next door to you in your state. Yep. And so Vermont's rural enough where there's deer, but it's common enough to see deer, but it's uncommon enough. It's rare enough. We'd actually comment on it. Like, oh, that was close. I saw a deer. And I was dropping off my kiddo to school, and we saw a deer jump over the snowbank and jump over across the road and head off. And so that was cool. And I said, oh, did you see the deer? And I told my, showed my daughter, and she's like, what? I'm like, there's a deer. Oh, okay. And we came back home, and I mentioned before, like, my wife is Nigerian. And I said, so, hey, I saw a deer on the way to school today. And she looked at me, and she goes, how do you know it was going to school? And I looked at her like, that is really funny. So like, I tweaked it and I sent it out, and I put it out as one of my daily dad joke posts.
Yeah.
And I've seen it pop up in the wild a couple of times. And I beam with pride knowing that, I gave something to the world. And that was like
amazing.
That joke. Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I don't know how I do it. I have no idea.
Awesome. And it's kind of reminiscent of there's a Groucho Marx joke that said, you know, this morning I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How I got in my pajamas, I'll never know. Like, it's like an old Groucho Marx joke. And so that's the cool thing too, is like, there's about 5% of the jokes. So there's over 500 jokes in here. So
yeah,
10 of them, I guess that's 5%, are brand new, never been published before until there. Mm-hmm. And the other ones, I say they're all of them are curated or tweaked to make sure they fit for like an all ages. But like you say, it's an all ages book. It's not a kid's book. It's an all ages book in the sense. The same thing is like, there's adult humor in there that kids just aren't going to get, but it's not adult humor as in it's like, kind of racy. Right, it's like exactly. almost like it's like a Disney movie now where you watch like a Pixar movie or something where it's just like, where the adults are laughing at a moment and then the kids just, it glazes right over. Like,
right.
The Barbie movie. What's
the Barbie movie?
Adult humor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's, full of adult humor.
Yep.
And the fourth thing about this book that's just really interesting is that I love old time radio. I love listening to all, and you can stream all this online too. There's all these old time radio programs of like the Jack Benny program, George Burns and Gracie Allen, Charlie McCarthy. Some of these jokes are there's some of that the humor they threw out there is amazing, but have been completely forgotten. So mm-hmm. I've been able to pull out some of those jokes and kind of brush them off and put them for a modern audience. A good example was there was an old Charlie McCarthy joke that I tweaked for so self-depreciating humor is always good because it allows you can make fun of yourself.
Right.
While so you know people aren't laughing at you, they're laughing with you because you're the one that brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good comedians. A lot of the comedians that actually are not the ones that actually geared towards telling dirty jokes. Like I'm thinking about the Jim Gaffigans and the Nate. There's a Nate. I can never say his last name right. Nate.
Burke, I always liked. You know, you're bringing up comedians. I always liked Mitch Hedberg because
Mitch Hedberg was hilarious.
His humor was just so dry. And it was so like matter of fact, like, I don't understand this. And then he would just talk about it. Like his big one is like, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to too. Like stupid stuff like that, you know, like just the wordplay. And it was like the way he delivered it. And it was like, you know, it wasn't offending anybody. It wasn't like mean, but.
Yeah,
the matter of
like
fact,
the one,
stuff.
He says something about it. I was watching an infomercial one day. He says, "Forget everything you know about pillow covers." He's like,
"Yeah,
so I did."
That's the one. Yeah, forget everything you know about this. So I did.
Yeah, it's like
it's really good. Yeah,
and he had what was that? Wasn't one where he's just like, and he doesn't hate when he sees like a son that says, and an escalator says, "Sorry, out of order." It should say, "Sorry, stairs."
Sorry,
like,
stairs. Like, yeah.
They just became stairs now.
Yeah, these like escalators don't break; that they just become stairs or something.
Yeah,
like that. It's like this dude just walking around, you know, the world, like looking at it at such a like a matter of fact, like simple. Simple take, and it's hilarious. But
I know I love that. There was that old Charlie McCarthy joke that I tweaked. It was it said, "I told my wife that in my 20s I was unbelievably handsome, and she says, 'You're right, I don't believe it.'" So that was like,
yeah, there you go. That's awesome. That's amazing. So you had dad jokes come out and it's available now, right? It's still available.
It is.
Yeah.
It's still available. It's on Amazon, but I always highly recommend people to get it through the Kickstarter because it's cheaper through the Kickstarter.
Okay.
And I completely messed up because it was like you guys, I have a podcast. I've interviewed a lot of people that have Kickstarter. So I actually learned a lot on how to do that. So the cool part about it is that I never put the shipping in on the pack to buy the dad jokes and the dadder jokes. So you would actually ended up getting that for those that want to, you can get that for both of them for like $30. And that's over 1,000 jokes on there, fully colored and free shipping by accident on my side. So, definitely it's you can buy it through Amazon, but I think it's listed for more expensive than that, plus the shipping piece. And the other, so what's really interesting is that doing this, we're fully funded. So the book's coming out. So, right. So that's the cool thing. That's fully funded. And we're looking at, you know, we're now on the stretch goal section of it. So if we hit 1,000, I'm going to add on another 100 jokes to make it, I basically add another 20 pages to it. And if you look at, cool. I got somebody else too. See, we're so close to 1,000 already.
Yeah.
Luckily all the fans at Fortress Comics are going to back this. Cause I've heard great things about the listenership and the viewership of Fortress Comics that every single viewer ends up backing projects that are featured on this. So
we'd hope. I think we have 15,000 subscribers. So that would be awesome.
I mean, this new one has ingenious jokes. Like Spock actually has 3 ears, the left ear, the right ear, and the final front ear.
Oh my God.
I mean,
that's amazing. Star Trek stuff. Jokes. Star Trek jokes, folks. Amazing.
Yeah. So you can't get that. See, that's rich right there. You're never going to find. You're nowhere else are you going to find a joke about Star Wars, Star Trek, and Friends.
And one book.
Deer all in one. See, there's
so there we go. There's the tiers right there. So at the Dadder Jokes campaign, folks, you get dad jokes and dadder jokes for $30 physical copies. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What I love, or if you're a digital reader, Mike.
Yep. $10. Yes, I am. Yeah, $10 for the PDFs. So
what I liked about the campaign is you have variant covers, which is, you know, important for any Kickstarter.
Right.
But you didn't price up the variants. You just made them the same price and said, pick your favorite cover.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I did that. And then some other people asking. So this is basically the other books that I did. Mm-hmm. So the two years was about my time in the Peace Corps. So I made it basically take place on Mars and made it a satire. It's kind of like my Catch-22 version. It's like my Joseph Heller version of as a comic book. Then Relief is my sequel to that, where it's about my time working for like Doctors Without Borders and stuff. But it takes place on Mars as well, so it is. And then I mentioned too, Lion and Dove, which is the romantic comedy. It's basically, it feels like if you take if animals live, if there was a almost, I guess, a cross between a 90s sitcom and BoJack Horseman way, because they're animals in that world.
Yeah.
And that's so fun to do. And there's always more stories coming out with that one too. So that's what, those are the, so somebody asked me, hey, can I get all, what about your other stuff? So that's basically a fire sale. Cause if you look at that for $15, you can get all five, that's over 630 pages. I have them all right here. There's over 630 pages of graphic novel right there for $15. So that could very well, Mike and Chris, be the best deal on the internet right now. So that's as an add-on.
Yeah,
that's one hell of a deal.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And all these add-ons that we talked about on there, also those are the add-ons on there. And I also put an add-on too. I think, I don't know if you went past it or not, is the bookmarks. Did you do the bookmarks yet? Is that, no? I think it's further down, right? Is it the bookmarks?
No, I didn't see the bookmarks.
There you go. There we go.
These bookmarks, man, I tell you, if I didn't make them, I'd definitely buy them. So how's that for a sales tactic?
I love it.
So these bookmarks are actually, there's 16 of them so far, and they almost look like church or like bookmarks with maybe a Bible verse in it. But if you look at it close, those are all dad jokes on bookmarks that are themed on, there's ones about cats, there's ones about, so what's that one there when the I gotta look at that one. That one's super funny, the one with the spruce tree. I actually put that on there.
What's a pine tree's favorite singer? Spruce Springsteen.
I love it. That's amazing.
See, it's like a spruce tree in there too.
I love it.
See, and you got the palm tree. So all of those jokes, like those are all, you know, what do you call a pile of cats? A meowton. What's a cat's favorite condiment? Mayo. Like though, meow. I think it's mayo. Mayo. Yeah. So, see all those, I kind of added on with, you know, images and stuff to make it just kind of like stick out of it. But yeah, that is so, that's been so, so fun doing those things.
Yeah. It's gotta be. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So to be very clear to all your listeners, you will win the gift giving season when you buy these books, because nothing more fun, especially when you throw in the bookmarks with them. There's nothing.
This one right here, I just know so many people that would use it. Why did the tree need to take a nap for rest? I know so many people that would love that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea to go along with the book. I mean, you hear a lot about add-ons and stretch goals and things that people do. And sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes they're very basic. Sometimes it's just a sticker. And a lot of times it is bookmarks, but it's just like a bookmark of the comic that you're getting. And this really fits in with it and is something unique. This is an amazing idea. I love this.
These what's a cat's favorite condiment? Mayo. I like the one too. A tree's first winter must be terrifying. Imagine the relief they feel in spring. That was like pretty deep. You think about it, you're like, wow. Yeah, they don't know if they're coming back, right? That's amazing.
But you will notice it's the relief. It should be like the relief, as in it's reliefing.
Right.
Like there's more relief coming back.
Yeah. R-E-L-E-A-F, everybody. Yeah. Wow. That one might be my favorite.
And then, you were talking about stretch goals. So you got
stretch
goals right here.
We're almost at $1,000, so yeah, 100 more jokes.
I'm sure we'll get that one. Yeah, we got 10 days left. There's no way we're not going to hit 1,000. I'm pretty sure we'll hit that.
Now, what
I'm really hoping for is like the deluxe dadder joke. So here's the thing.
Yeah, what's
the deluxe dadder jokes? So I've done a lot of research on dad jokes. I mean, obviously, somebody, and like I said, as an academic by passion as well, I love learning and researching things. I'm the kind of person, if you look at my podcast feed, it's all indie comic folks, and shows. And then it's also all these history shows, like random history stuff. I love that stuff. And so the origin of the dad joke, the first time the dad joke was ever mentioned was 1987. It was in an op-ed piece in the Gettysburg Gazette. It was an op-ed piece. It was mentioned in 1987. It says, you know, something about like, you know, give credit to the dad joke or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I want to, so recall back in 1987 was, if you look at it from a generational perspective, you had the greatest generation. That was a World War II generation that fought in World War II. They gave birth to the baby boomers. And the baby boomer generation ends in around 1966, 67 mm-hmm. or so. So you think about what happened in 1987 is when the Gen Xers, the first Gen Xers, are starting to reach the age of parenthood. They're in their 20s now. They're starting to turn 20. And at that point is when also culturally speaking, the role of the father has changed mid to early 80s to the 70s to the 60s. All that point, the role of the father was someone who was a stern disciplinarian or the one that had the wisdom. They had no personality other than that. You think about all the TV shows before that. If there was any comedic role of a male, they were either single or they were the uncle. They were never actually the father. The father was always the anchor in the family, mm-hmm. even in the sitcoms. When you think about Happy Days, if you think about any like Family Ties, all these things, the dads were not goofy. If they were, goofy things happened to them, but they were not made to be like goofy, to be like, hey, I'm being funny here. Mm-hmm. The role of the father was never funny. The role of the father was at the end of the episode, they imparted the wisdom and they're like, oh, thanks, dad. He's like, you're welcome. Now let's go make sure, you know, mow the lawn.
Yeah.
You know, Billy, you know, like it was like, it's
right.
So the role of the father was always someone who was just always the source of wisdom. But it mm-hmm. wasn't until the mid to late 80s when you started seeing the Gen Xers starting to reach adulthood. And is the fact that also too, the reason why I'm specifically being the Gen Xers is because every generation that comes before it was raised by the generation before, obviously. So what that means is that the things they wish they had when they were a child, they want to impart onto their children as well. Mm. My father, he's 70, he turned 70 this year. And he basically said, we just learned a few years ago, they had a train set that he never played with. Like, cause he was an adult, he kept, but he never opened up and played with it. And he always said, he goes, well, you know, you had four boys. It was going to get broken. So I kept it safe. But I believe it was because there's almost a sense of shame for the earlier baby boomers to actually play with toys they mm-hmm. had when they were kids. Mm-hmm. Like that's not what adults do.
No.
And there's something that happened with the Gen Xers is that they kind of wanted to impart some of that onto their offspring. So now the Gen Xers had a little bit more freedom to stay young longer or be more proud of being able to enjoy the things of their childhood longer. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid talking about comic books, I remember going to the comic book shop in the mid 80s. Men in their 40s would go to the comic book shop. And here's something a lot of people don't remember is that they gave you your comic books in a brown paper bag because yep. there was a sense of shame about
it. Right.
So these guys would show up and would get comic books and put them in a brown paper bag and
right.
like in a sleeve and then walk out of the store.
Yeah.
And they didn't want anyone to see that they bought comic books. And so that was a big thing that happened. And so, but in the mid to late 80s is when you started seeing shows like Full House showed up where mm-hmm. Danny Tanner wasn't, he was the dad. So he wasn't the funny guy, but you had father figure adjacent folks like Uncle Jesse and Joey who are there, who could be funny, who are free to be funny. And Danny Tanner was like, he liked everything clean and stuff. Funny things happened to him, but he wasn't goofy for the sake of being funny.
Right.
Bill Cosby was a comedian at the time who actually had his own really popular show, but he was a comedian, but he was still, his character, Cliff Huxtable, had this wisdom sense to him where there was still a sense of wisdom that he imparted, but there were cracks in it where he was able to be funny sometimes. And it wasn't until you get into, and then Family Matters came out in the late 80s and it was on the early 90s where the father was very strict in the first couple seasons. He was the brunt of jokes, but he was never the jokester. But when it get full on till season 7, 8, 9, he was funny. And that the reason why for that is because also what happened in the early 90s, 91, 92, all the way up to the late 90s was Home Improvement. Home Improvement was a show where you just had a straight on goofy dad, straight on.
That's true.
Full on goofy. Yeah.
Great. And show.
Yeah. Amazing.
And,
show,
and so when I think about all the things that we all talk about in pop culture now, all the things that are famous, if you look at, and I, as a societal like a societal, like family tree of where it all, what the root of it all was, this is my working theory. It all comes down to shattering the perception of what a father figure has to be in a nuclear family. And that is someone who's being stern and someone that's being the one that imparts the wisdom. When you smash the patriarchal perceptions of what a father has to be, then in allowing the dad to be goofy and the role of a, and the role of a dad joke is an offspring of that sense of that wise thing, because in order to tell a dad joke, there is a sense of wit, there is a sense of playing on words, there is a sense of wisdom to it, and allowing to allowing that father to do that, or on the father figure to do that, then allowed the father to have a personality in the family, allow the father to have a personality, allowed the, and because of that, then you're allowed to have the flexibility of the mother figure, the matriarch of the family, to be a breadwinner, to actually be this and actually and take on different roles as well, and allows that. Because if you think about early on, like the it was a shtick for the movie, the Michael Keaton movie, Mr. Mom, is like, that's weird. A dad being at home. Like was like the whole theme of the movie. Yeah. But at the end of the movie, what happened was everything came out right again because the mom moved back and became the mom again because she didn't like working there. And the dad got to go back to work. Like there was still, that movie came out in 85.
Yeah.
So that's what I firmly, firmly believe is like, we can trace back the idea of the unabashed pride of grabbing a hold of your hobbies and passions and not feeling as though society is pressuring you into being a, to take on this stereotypical role of what an adult needs to be. I don't see paper bags anymore when you go to the comic book shop. They actually have printed names of the comic book shop you came from in there. We see guys in their 40s and 50s of like now this Gen X, they're like now full on into middle age now.
Yeah.
Playing Dungeons and Dragons, like in public, like in coffee shops. We're seeing them host D&D nights at the local library.
Right.
We see people like happily playing, you know, playing Magic the Gathering or playing Pokemon. We see everybody proudly holding on to their nerd culture and saying, you know what, I'm proud of the things I love and I'm not ashamed of it. And I really believe it comes down to that source of that 1987 beginning of that shift of the first term being used, dad joke, was able to take that term and do that. So it's and as you can see there's a passion behind the academic and like the history behind of what a dad joke is. And I can say is like, if you can kind of give credit to the Gen X generation for actually like creating this unabashed pride of, publicly acknowledging nerd culture and the idea of the fact that the role of any parent does not necessitate gender is part and parcel to that as well. And what I love about, as I said, I got three kids. The role of the dad joke that I truly find fun, amazing about it is that it teaching my children it's okay to be embarrassing. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be embarrassed. It's okay to make mistakes. And right. and I am, and they're at that age there where I still haven't embarrassed them much in public, other than the fact where like I still like so like kid level jokes that still like, no, Dad. Like I would like if they're like talking to their kids or like going to the, or like I see them at the bus stop, I'll stop by and roll down the window. It's like, hey, I'm going to the booger store. Did you need anything? And they're like, no, Dad. All right. So it's like, but that's it's awesome. That's the kind of stuff that is, I think it's like the imparting is like that, that piece of what a dad joke is. So
yeah, it's okay to be that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. That was amazing. I loved every second of that.
Yeah.
You just you never got to the deluxe dadder jokes part. So what is you're a right. deluxe dadder joke?
I don't think
I'm, so. Yeah, so the deluxe dadder joke piece. So yeah, Chris,
I was so intrigued. I was just like sitting here like listening. I'm like, I'm not going to interrupt them.
Yeah, we started 1987. I got lost, man. That was it.
Right. So yeah, see, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. So so this is why you guys get paid the big bucks. See, it's gonna put your guests back on track. So basically, the deluxe dadder joke is gonna have like a researched like essay on the history of the dad joke and the value of what the dad joke is on society.
I love
that's
that.
What it is.
So we got a little snippet of that. That was amazing. And everything you talked about like lines up and makes sense like that.
Right.
Who knew the dad joke was it meant more, you know, to society than it's amazing. I have no words.
You got me thinking back all the TV shows because I'm a huge sitcom fan, especially 90s sitcoms.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking back because Home Improvement's one of the first ones I ever watched. Like I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. So I got really into that. That doesn't really fit the dad theme, but and then we talked about Everyone Loves Raymond earlier. And I was even trying to think of that 70s show. I don't know if you ever watched that. I know it's more Mike and Maya's generation.
Yeah.
But it fits that theme where the dad is the stern guy and funny things happen to him, but he's not funny.
Right. Yep.
And all that. Yeah. That really got me thinking about all that. So that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you just for any of your viewers and listeners out there, just check. It's like it was like that around that edge between 86, 87 when you started having hints of allowing dad characters to start doing things. Even in the movies, the dad was always somebody in the mid to early 80s and on, was never goofy.
Right.
Goofy things might have happened to them, but they never were deliberate in trying and being funny around their kids.
Right. Right.
So they might be eccentric or anything
and
that.
And it's funny you bring that up in the movies because we can wrap this up in a second, keep everybody back on track, but shows like Stranger Things, right? You don't see the father of one of the kids' families that much, and it takes place in the 80s, right? But the scenes that you do see him in, he's being very serious, and when he comments on things, but it's absolutely hilarious how stern and oblivious he is to us now, right? Back in the day, that's just how that's how the 80s dads were. But it's wow, this guy has no clue what is going on and is the butt of the joke that everybody else knows in the room, but he doesn't know. And it's that seems absurd now, right? That's and that all makes sense. If you look at the 80s like that, where you look at Stranger Things, dad's where are the kids? Oh, they're outside playing. It's they're getting attacked by monsters. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, he's inside reading the newspaper.
Yeah, reading the newspaper. Got to catch up with the current events. That's your role. But I don't know. That's just now I'm just going to approach those things differently when I see them. You make a lot of sense with what you're talking about with the history of it. Wow.
Yeah. See, look at this. Yeah. She thought it was just going to be good, be lighthearted banter. But there's good things here. There's meat behind this.
Yeah,
see?
There really is. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I need. Yeah. I need you to make it to 2000 because that dad joke of the day daily calendar.
That sounds awesome.
Make my life a lot better.
I would like a hardcover edition myself. So 2500 would be great, folks, if we could get there. I'm a fan of hardcovers myself. When I share that book around with people, I want it to be sturdy and wow, this is a joke book with substance. It's hardcover. Come on, this is They mean business. Yeah. So
you know, slap it on your palm. Like, I mean, that's a good thing about a dad. Yeah.
There you go.
You can point with books too. A hardcover book is easy to point with.
You're thinking about it. Well, I mean, we're gonna have as of today, everybody, when this comes out, you'll have it's about a week left.
About a week when this launches, yeah.
Yeah, we're almost at 1,000 now. Come on, back it. There's a lot of options there. The variant covers, they're not different prices. They're all the same price, so whichever one you want. Full color. It's a joke book with a lot of heart, for sure. A lot of thought that you've heard just now. So, I think this is, it sounds like it's going to be a hit. I mean, the first one was a hit. Why not? Wouldn't this one be as well? And you can get the first one as well, so for cheaper than Amazon. So,
yeah.
And that's a rarity these days.
Yeah, that is. Barney, thanks so much for being here today. We really appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, you're very passionate about this, and we were just Chris and I were just like completely lost in this interview. It was like we were just watching a podcast ourselves. So, I got to thank you for being here today. And if our listeners and our viewers, followers want to follow you and all the stuff you're doing, do you have a social media or something to direct them to?
Absolutely. So storycomic.com, and I was surprised that what that domain wasn't taken, like when I made that 5 years ago. I'm like, really? Wow. That wasn't taken? So yeah. Wow. Storycomic.com. There you'll find all my podcasts are on there. All my all the links to all my books are gonna be on there as well. Great. And all the links I'm on Facebook, I'm on Blue Sky, I'm on Threads, I'm on Instagram. Nice. I'm on all that stuff too. So yeah. And you know what? And check me out too. Doing really good on Friendster and MySpace, and definitely have a really good Yahoo group going too.
Wow, so Yahoo group!
Oh, man. What about your Google Plus account? How's that holding
my
up?
I got my Google Plus account too, and then you go on Lycos, and you can type it in there, and you'll find Story Comic right there as well. Great. So
So to everybody out there watching, listening, you know the drill. There's links in the show notes down below to the Kickstarter, to Barney's website. So go check it out. We've talked a lot about it, but the book looks like a blast and the jokes are great. So everybody go give a shot and back it now.
Yeah.
Barney, thank you so much for taking the time today and talking with us. And we look forward to the next time, man.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate the time. This has been amazing.
Anytime, man.
And we're back.
We're back. So check it out on the Kickstarter. If you love some terrible puns and dad jokes like we do, why not?
Which I do.
Yeah, we love that stuff. So, and with that, let's get to the comic book news.
Comics.
Oh boy, Jonathan Hickman's here this week. He revealed this week while talking to Popverse that he's working on a new Marvel project. The project says he's one he swore he would never take on, but seemed to have a change of heart about. He's quoted saying, this is the quote, folks, quote, start quote, "I'm working on another book for Marvel right now that I swore I would never work on," Hickman said. "The sole reason why I'm doing this is that there was a way into it I had never considered before. I found it, and now I'm having the time of my life working on it. How long will it last? I don't know. And I'll definitely quit when I stop feeling that." What could it be, Chris? What do you think?
Spider-Man?
That's like, what I thought. Why is he saying that I didn't know I had a way into it? Like, it's some obscure character, right? Or would it just be like a title book like that?
No, I think what he's trying to say is like this, the story he wanted to tell, like how he would set it up and like get it in there.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I go Spider-Man or somebody of that caliber is that's someone he's never really touched, even in his Avengers run. Spider-Man's a little bit in like Secret Wars and some other stuff he's done, but not really a prominent figure in any of his work.
Mm-hmm.
And Spider-Man, from what I can tell, people who love Spider-Man have been in Spider-Man for the long haul.
Oh yeah.
And they seem to, it has almost a soap opera, as most comics do, but more than most has a soap opera thing to it.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard to not jump into Spider-Man, but I think it's tough for a writer to come in and do something unique and new.
Right.
And I think that's something that Hickman like kind of prides himself on, is trying to do something different and have a long haul story to tell. So I could see that being it. I have a hard time picturing who else it would be.
Yeah.
He's already done X-Men. He's in the middle of Ultimates. He's already done Avengers Illuminati. He did the big event book.
He did Fantastic Four, right? You said that?
And Fantastic Four, yeah.
Fantastic Four, he did that.
Great run, Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So he's done a lot of characters throughout Marvel. Not a whole lot of solo books at Marvel.
Right.
Other than like little stories here and there. He's got a few like miniseries and everything he did, especially early on in his career.
Yeah.
But yeah, my money's on Spider-Man. I think he's got a Spider-Man story. Nothing against is it Jim Zub doing Spider-Man right now?
Or, I think so.
Yeah. I'll look it up while you're doing the next story. But
yeah.
I think it's Jim Zub, but nothing against him, but the Spider-Man team is, I mean, other than the artist, obviously, John Romita Jr. doing the art. The writer isn't exactly the biggest name in the world, and I could see them being like, Hickman wants this.
Goodbye.
Leave.
To anybody, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see his take on Spider-Man, because like you said, he likes to do these big overarching plots, and I don't know if we've really seen that in a Spider-Man book. This week, Distillery Comics launched its direct-to-consumer online story to coincide with their first title, The Devil's Cut. Now that's Distillery, D-S-T-L-R-Y Comics. Distillery announced a new comic series from creators Becky Cloonan and Tula Lode called Somna. The series is said to be a murder mystery set during the 1600s witch hunts in England. Tula and Becky will act as both writers, with the artist series making this a fairly unique relationship in the comics industry. The comic first appeared in their anthology book, The Devil's Cut. So I have not checked out this Distillery. But yeah, cool.
Quick correction, it's Zeb Wells writing Spider-Man right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Distillery seems interesting. I saw the book on the shelf when I went to go get my comics, and I got too many books, man. I got too many. And I can't get myself to pick up another one right now.
Right.
And this one sounds interesting. I like the idea of like an artist and both people on the team being the artist and writer and doing back and forth and like writing as a team, then doing different pages and art. Like that's cool, unique, something different.
Yeah.
But that's like a behind the scenes kind of geeky thing. I think for most people, they're just going to see these two are on the book and either they're probably a Becky Cloonan fan because she's the bigger name. And check it out. The book sounds interesting, but I don't
know. Yeah, I'm looking at the shop right now at Distillery, and they have like a $200 toy, a $300 toy that I don't know. They have some variant covers that are $100 each. I don't know what I'm looking at. I'm not paying $100 for a variant cover.
Yeah, they're... Here's some Devil's Cut covers. But this is Somna.
Yeah,
it's a cool cover, and I like how they're presenting it, like by the two.
Yeah,
and then I really like this cover too. But yeah, it's just I got too many books, everybody. I got too many books to read. I'm already behind so much on books. I can't do another one.
And they say like, oh, is it changing the way people read digitally? But on their website, I don't see any way to access digital comics. Upcoming drops, maybe. Oh,
because they're the ones that had that. They had that not blockchain digital thing.
Yeah,
that I kept saying was NFTs, and then people got mad at me because they're like, it's not NFTs, but it's fucking NFTs.
If I don't understand it, it's probably an NFT.
This is from a while ago. A $300 fucking toy? Holy shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand that. They have a few things to sell on the website.
Yeah, because they have the other book Gone that Jock is doing.
Uh-huh.
I like that, that I was interested in, but I couldn't pull the trigger on that one either.
Yeah.
Digital Different. Here we go. You sent me to nothing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't know how to access the digital comics, folks. When you figure it out, we'll let you know. I don't know what's going on.
I literally clicked the. I'm sure this is what you just did and just explained.
Yeah.
But I literally clicked the button that said digital comics, and it sent me to the same page.
But they have all these quotes from all these like big comic sites, like, oh, this is changing the industry, and the like website makes no sense to me.
Yeah. So here, yeah. Once you own a digital copy, you can read it and resell it on our digital marketplace. I'm pretty sure that's what the selling point to NFTs were. But yeah, it's
that's stupid.
I like their. They've got a lot of cool creators. They got a lot of cool books. Looks like I'm not going to get into your digital marketplace. Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, not happening.
But this is I mean, the founding creators. I mean, if you remember, Stephanie Phillips got a book here.
Yeah.
Tinian, Snyder, Ram V, Mark Bernardin. Like guys we like, gals we like, but. You're going to have to wow me because I got a big pull list.
Yep. There's a lot of books out there, folks.
I'm really upset. Like, I really want, like, why does the digital take me to nothing?
It makes me
mad.
I don't get it, dude. But what I do get is what we read this week. So let's jump to that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go. It says the digital marketplace is coming soon, so you can only buy physical on their website right now.
Okay.
Because I clicked on the Devil's Cup book that was $100. I was like, I wonder, and there's a digital thing for it here.
Yeah.
So I really want to know if that $100 variant is going to be $100 digital too.
Oh my God.
That'd be funny.
Some idiot's going to pay for that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I wouldn't even buy a $100 variant physical because it's like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Last book I spent that much money on, and I didn't even spend, I think I spent $89. Yeah, it was $89 plus shipping, so about $100, was Captain America 100, aka Captain America number one.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Whatever, I don't get it. All right, what did we read this week? I read Blade number 2. Are you still reading Blade?
Hell yeah.
That was a good issue. Liking the story so far. That's Hill and Casagrande in the art. Yeah, it's Blade in Japan, so it's pretty sick. He goes to visit his weapon dealer to figure out, you know, he released this world-ending demon god thing and he wants to kill it. So he needs to find a weapon. And then his evil weapon dealer is in trouble, so he goes to find her after she gets kidnapped and is fighting this like shogun, like he's like head of this like temple thing, but he can possess people. He's like I've got some demon powers, and that's how it ends. It was a good issue. I really liked it.
Yeah, I really liked it too. It kept kind of the action pace of the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
The art was really good. What I find really funny about it is this page right here. So you can see these people in the mask. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I sent that to our buddy Travis Gibb because those are the same exact masks that characters wear in his book, Coins of Judas.
Oh, yeah. Those are the Coins of Judas masks, aren't they? Yeah. Did he have some words about that?
He asked me what it was from. I told him and he didn't say another word.
Oh.
But yeah, it was... It was funny in the moment I'm reading it, and I'm like, Coins of Judas, look at that.
Yeah, I knew those masks looked familiar.
But yeah, it was a really cool book, and you know, we got kind of the big bad for this issue and into probably next issue that's going to lead us to the bigger bad and so on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a fun book for sure. So we had a little mix-up with the Night Terrors stuff. So I read Night Terrors number 4. And then I read Night Terrors, Night's End, number 1, because Night Terrors 4 wasn't the end. Yeah, so Night Terrors 4.
You mean Night Terrors, Night's End number 1, aka Night Terrors number 5?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so in 4, the heroes lose. They bring the Nightmare Stone to Insomnia. It like makes him wake up and releases all his monsters into the real world instead of being in Nightmare World. Then we get the origin, which is kind of cool, where we find out like why he hates the Justice League. Like, they killed his family trying to save the city, which is, I thought that was pretty cool. I thought it was a cool background story. And then we had Night Terrors, Night's End, number 1. It was a great ending. There's, you know, leaves on a cliffhanger that there's this new version of Dr. Fate created called Dr. Hate, is created with the helmet of hate instead of the helmet of fate. You can't make this shit up.
You literally can, Mike.
Yeah, you can. They just did. Insomnia is defeated, but everyone like is scared of the Justice League now, and we find out that like that was Amanda Waller's motivation, because this all started with like her hating the heroes. It's all part of her plan, and now she has the Nightmare Stone, and we have a Dr. Hate. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what Williamson's doing, but I'm along for the ride, dude. I was like, this is pretty cool.
I'll say this, everybody. The Night Terrors from front to back,
yeah,
is a complete story that I really enjoyed.
Yeah,
those last like 3 or 4 pages that kind of set up another thing. Uh-huh. You could not read that and just enjoy what this is.
Yeah,
is
for one sure. Thing. For sure.
And I really loved it. I thought it was a great event. And kudos to the team for doing it. Those last 4 pages are setting up that Titans book. What is it? Beast World?
I forgot that's what it is.
It's let me see. Because it's that things are falling off my desk. I don't know if you heard that or not.
I forgot they said they're going after the Titans or something.
Yeah, so they say the next target is the Titans, and to be continued in Beast World number 1 in November. Mike, I might pick up Beast World now.
Yeah.
That's how much I like this book.
Dude, I was like, what is that? That's a Dr. Fate helmet. And they're like, no, it's Dr. Hate. I was like, wow. Yeah.
So I think I said at the time when they announced Beast World that there was no way you were going to get me to read a Titans event.
Yeah, you did. Well, you definitely said that.
I'm going back on that because I'm going to at least check it out, because I just love this event so much.
Yeah. I want to know why Waller wants to kill so many heroes.
Yeah, and it's a cool reveal at the end, and I'm just even more interested in like what Waller's doing, because she's been consistently for the past couple of years in the comics been trying to take out the heroes. Like, if you remember the Earth 3 book from a while back, that was her whole plan there.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to follow the story arc of what's going on with her.
Yeah, and I want to know who they put in the Dr. Hate helmet, because they didn't show the person that stepped up to do it.
Yeah, that's, and I couldn't guess. I have no clue.
That'd be awesome if it was like Peacemaker or some shit.
Nah, Peacemaker's the moneymaker, man. You can't put him under a helmet like that.
You can't put his helmet under a helmet.
I like too the Insomnia when he's before he turns.
Yeah.
And like how his family was killed because the Justice League were fighting.
Yeah.
And it references Dark Knight Death Metal.
Oh,
you were just out there fighting evil Batman, so saving my family.
He's great. Like, you're fighting evil Batman, and destroyed half the city. So
great series. If you're a trade waiter or you weren't sure about this, I would recommend Night Terrors. It was a fun little event book.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then my last book I got to this week. Well, I read Godzilla Rivals, Titanosaurus. These books are fun. Big monsters fighting each other. I'm a huge Mothra fan, so that was a lot of fun. And these are like these one shots that IDW is doing. So, these are all completed stories. And then Masters of the Universe, Masterverse, number 4. I finally finished it just in time for the new Masters of the Universe series to come out. Celia Nunez, this is the anthology series, a lot of different He-Man stories, but then we finally see that like the overarching Watcher guy sees that it's not just He-Man's powers, like he is good natured, and him observing all these universes, like he almost got caught with like an evil presence trying to take him over, and He-Man stops it, and he's like, oh shit, I was wrong, like you're a good guy. So that was a cool 4-issue series. And this is kind of like, I think it's along the lines of the Netflix series when they release these. mm-hmm. He-Man book. So it's like in that universe. So yeah, I'm loving it. So more of that.
So
I had one more, Chris.
Yep.
Gnorth's swimsuit edition, number one DC Comics. It was a little upsetting because it was mostly pinup covers and a little bit of a story, and that was it. So
that's what they announced it as. So
yeah, but like I thought, like Gnorth was going to get his own story, and it was kind of just like a short story without any comic pages. So, and they're the covers, they're the pinup of the like the variant covers that were already out there for each book. So,
well, unlike Mike, Gnorth swimsuit edition was the greatest thing that ever happened.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Everybody don't listen to Mike, go buy that book.
The cover of that book itself was worth it. I mean, it's an amazing cover.
It was a pinup book. Like
that's
kind of what it was sold as. I think the stories in it were even reprints. Like they weren't even original stories. So I had no expectation of that, and I got exactly what I wanted out of it. And I think it was just a fun time. So I was all for it, Mike.
A little disappointed, but all right. That's all I had.
You're allowed to be wrong, Mike.
Yeah. All right. All right. I just want more Gnorth stuff.
You know? I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah.
We do need more of that character.
Yeah.
But that should be the real Beast War or Beast World book. It's just Gnorth. Hey, maybe it is. Nuts.
Maybe it is. You don't know. You never know.
So, Mike, I got Rooster Fighter Volume 4 just came out.
Nice.
Awesome book.
Yeah,
we find out that he has a long lost brother, that his father left his family and had another family, so now he has a stepbrother who also has the power to kill these demons, and he has to team up with him to save their father,
mm-hmm.
because their father was abducted by these demons that we find out are actually a step up from demons. They're devils, Mike.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're too powerful for one rooster to fight alone. And then we also get the backstory that their family actually has a long lineage of fighting these things.
Uh-huh.
And that they're actually these roosters are the guardians for the world against these demons. I love this fucking book, Mike.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
It's so good. I can't wait for volume 5.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, everybody go check out Rooster Fighter. And if I could find the page real quick, there's an awesome splash page in this too.
Mm-hmm.
That's him hitting a home run as a rooster. I'm not going to find it in time. I'm trying to vamp a little bit here.
There you go. Just keep vamping.
Nope, it's not your roosters.
Okay.
Kickstarter book. And you'll hear more about this later in the week because I interviewed Will Robson, and that'll be up probably Friday.
Yep.
Outbreaks, number one. The only ongoing zombie anthology comics in the world, apparently.
I think that's the joke of it. Right?
Yeah, I love Will Robson. He did. He was on the show a long, long time ago.
I do remember that. Yep.
And that's back when he was doing the Great Lakes Avengers, and now he's kind of doing solo stuff. And he's doing this on Kickstarter. This is the only Kickstarter book. He's got a book coming to Zoop, and he's still working for like some of the big two as well. But this has two stories in it. And what he said is that there's one story called Deadeye Dick that's going to be ongoing through the entire series as long as he does it. And it's what he wants to do is not just do like The Walking Dead again. He wants to do like fun zombie stories that are different. And when we talked, he asked me what my favorite zombie movie was, and I told him it's this movie Fido. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, Mike.
No.
But it takes place in the 50s, and basically after World War II, there was a zombie war, and humans learned to like live with them and domesticate zombies.
Oh wow.
And then it all goes terribly wrong, but it's set up like a 50s like
that's awesome movie. I've never heard of that one.
It's a really great movie. If I can get anyone to go out there and watch that movie, it's one of my favorite movies of all time, and not a lot of people heard of it.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
He immediately jumped on that to say that was in his top like 5.
Oh wow.
So awesome. He was like, yes, that's kind of stuff I want to do, something different.
Mm-hmm.
And with Deadeye Dick, it's this ex-soldier who was a sniper who got shot in the eye and then had to go back home after war without his left eye. So trying to figure out what he's doing with his life when he comes across this person who gives him a zombie eye. And apparently that story is going to turn into like the zombie eye is slowly going to infect his body and give him superpowers.
Interesting.
So it's going to be like a zombie superhero.
Amazing.
And then the other story is Rotten Luck, which is more of a just like tongue in cheek kind of two people wake up and the zombie apocalypse happens. And that's a three-part story. And then there's going to be more and more stories that are going to replace Rotten Luck and all that. But issue two is on Kickstarter right now. And I would recommend it if you like zombie stuff, especially like fun, goofy zombie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun book.
Cool.
And he even put a little sticker of a zombie head in the back of the book.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Some stuff from last week, actually. One, I think you must have missed when you were buying your books, Mike, because Dark Knights of Steel number 12 came out.
Wait. No. No, it didn't. Really? Oh, my God.
So I won't
How many months has it been?
Yeah, I won't spoil too much because it's the last issue of the series, but...
I gotta put my comic... Hold on. It
was a really good ending. I liked where it left everything off. It was a cool fight. All in all, this is a great series that when you all get it as a trade, and I will probably buy the hardcover of this when it comes out,
yeah,
you'll love it. Yes, Mike, the frustration with it was like it just came out randomly,
yeah,
and I agree with that. But as its own product, standalone without those delays in mind, this is one of my favorite DC books in a long time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I really loved it. And it ends in a way that I think is smart because it does end the story and they could never touch it again and it would stand alone and be fine. And it leaves that little crack open for something else where they could do more. So I thought they masterfully did the ending personally and really love that series and can't wait to get a nice big hardcover of that.
Nice.
Newbern came back, and so Newbern 9 and 10 came out the past 2 months, and I caught up on those. Newbern 10 came out last week, and it's just it's a great, like, noir, think Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, except it's Chip Zdarsky and, is it Jason Phillips? It's Sean Phillips' kid. I forget his name. And I just really like that book. The first volume was great. Now we're kind of, they're bringing it back, doing more with it, and I think they're killing it. And yeah, one I'm really shocked that you're not reading is Big Game, and Big Game number 2 came out last week.
I'm not reading Big Game. Yeah,
About that. I think you would get more out of this book than I would by a long shot because you
Mark Miller universe. Yeah,
yeah, because you read all of his books.
I couldn't remember the name of it. I forgot the name was Big Game.
Yeah, write down Big Game because I think you will really enjoy it. So in this one, there's. I never read the Chrononauts book, but apparently that was a time travel book.
Oh, yeah, that was a good book for sure.
So they show up in this, and the heroes that were left behind that remember the events from Wanted get them to take some people back in time to kind of prove that the events of Wanted happened. So they go back to 1986 to see like the villains take over and everything. Mm-hmm. And prove that there were superheroes at one point. And that's so that happens. And then on the other side, we get a good moment with Nemesis as he just slaughters the entire group of ambassadors from the Ambassador series.
That's amazing.
And I just love that he's a big part of this because he's one of my favorite from the stuff I've read.
Yeah.
It's a really great crossover book. And I think it shows a lot that someone like me who doesn't read everything he puts out.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting a lot out of it, but once again, there's characters where I'm just like, that's a book that I never read.
Yeah,
so I know they exist, but I never read it. I don't
especially
know
as like older stuff that nobody like the Starlight was that one book, and then there
was Starlight his like Buck Rogers book, where it's a guy going to space and then coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he shows up in the first issue.
Superior, the Superman book.
That one has not happened yet.
The kid in the wheelchair that like he's like Shazam. He like turns into Shazam, but he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, they haven't touched him yet. I don't know if they will because I think he wants to reboot Superior as well.
Yeah,
but there's a lot going on. It's a really great book, and yeah, I would really love to hear what you think of it.
Yeah, I got to read him for sure.
Sean Murphy's book that was on Indiegogo got published by Massive Comics called Plot Holes.
Nice.
And the whole premise here is we have these characters who were part of like fictional universes, and they're very obvious like what they're supposed to be. And they go around to different works of literature and try to fix the plot holes in them.
Interesting.
So that they can be published.
Okay.
And the only way they continue to exist is if they have like a certain percentage that make it through.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a this creature that's going through all the different unpublished works and destroying them, bringing their numbers down. And we learn about this character who's brought into the world and told like that his world is fake. It was written by somebody, mm-hmm. and that world was destroyed when he left. And there's some really great things in here. There's a character that's like kind of looks like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, okay.
And he was created in the 30s. So he's like the oldest character. And that's he's funny. Like vaguely racist in it. And like everybody gives him shit for it.
Yeah.
Because he'll say like, something. And everybody's like, dude, what the hell?
You can't say that.
Yeah. And there's a giant cat that's obviously from, what is the one in the cartoon? Thundercats.
Oh, nice.
And there's a guy just called Johnny Manga.
Wow.
I mean, pretty obvious there. And so on and so forth. It's a fun ride. I like what he's doing, and I look forward to continuing it. And then apparently at the end of the book, he also promotes his next Kickstarter that he's doing. So
cool.
Sean Gordon Murphy, a creator that I really like, doing some cool stuff.
It'd be cool if he came on the show, if he's got a Kickstarter going on.
Man, Sean, we'll see.
What do you think, Sean?
Conan Barbarian number 2 came out, and it's more awesome Conan stuff. Nice. If you remember last issue, Mike, I told you that he met a female warrior who was fighting mm-hmm. beside him.
Yeah.
And I told you I was pretty sure I knew he was going to bang her. He bangs her in this issue.
Wow. Classic. Classic Conan stuff, right?
But he goes back to Samaria to... Hey, Poppy.
Hey. Poppy. There's a dog in the show.
He goes back to Samaria and is going to get his brethren to help him fight these zombies that are mm-hmm. coming about and figure out what's going on. Well, apparently there's something in Samaria that's causing this to happen. So okay. all of his, when he walks through, everyone he knew is dead and just sitting there rotting. And then this thing happens and they all raise and he has to fight his own brethren.
Oh, boy.
And so a pretty cool moment.
That's awesome.
And yeah, just fun barbarian stuff. Classic Conan stuff. He fights people. He says a lot of things about Crom and he bangs some chick.
I was going to say.
That's all I want out of Conan.
Does he speak to Crom a lot? Yeah, there you go.
And then Ultimate Invasion number 3 came out, speaking of Jonathan Hickman. And in this, we kind of learn through Howard Stark that it's not just the Maker controlling everything. He's got this council of different factions that are controlling the world. And it's really funny to me because I'm sure there's some truth in here where it's like they talk about how they fabricate things to make certain people look bad
mm-hmm.
to just keep things on the level. And they even say like, listen, like, cause he opens up and like, there's somebody from another country and he's like, they're the bad guys. Who are they? And they're just like, dude, pretty soon you're going to be the bad guy. So like,
yeah, right.
Chill out.
Yeah.
That's and funny. All this, we get a look of who, Khonshu, gives his powers to, and then we also get another character who has Ra's power and all this. It's a lot of fun. And at the end of the book, we get a glimpse into something that's happening where all these, if you remember from the last issue, all those heroes came and tried to attack the Maker to fix mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
And he was able to take care of them all. Well, we learn that in the far future, where all those characters came from is none other than Kang the Conqueror. Controlling things, and he's got I was gonna look up to see what the Ultimate Kang Conqueror looked like because it's been a while,
mm-hmm.
but he's got a very Iron Man-esque suit in it.
Sick.
Actually it's like half Iron Man, half Lex Luthor, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is the blue and the or the green and the purple.
Yeah, but it's fucking awesome, Mike. I love it. Yeah,
awesome.
So that was everything I had this week, Mike. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on X, Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on pretty much any social media. X is the big one I use all the time, or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And you can find the show at Fortress Comics _ on X/Twitter and at fortresscomicnews.com. And if you want to support the show, you can give us a 5-star review and podcatcher your choice. That's the best way to do it. You can like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version of the show, or you can head over to Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. Thank you all so much for listening and or watching this week, and we'll see y'all here probably tomorrow.
Nice.